Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by New Vibes Wine, bringing new vibes to the table with limited edition appellations and monthly club memberships. Subscribe at newvibeswine.com today and receive 50% off your first wine club order.
Welcome to HRN on Tour at 2023 Food and Wine Classic in Aspen. I am Christine Sykes Lowe.
And I'm Jennifer Bushman.
And today we are joined by Manit Chauhan and Vivek Diora, power duo behind Nashville, Tennessee's Morph Hospitality Group. Hey, guys.
Hello,
so good
Christine.
To see you again.
Hello.
Good to see you as well, and thank you for having us.
Deja vu all over again. So it's been a year. We talked about a lot of things last time. We talked about all the things you have going on in your lives, but also work-life balance. Has anything settled out in that arena?
Well, we always joke that work-life balance doesn't exist. And I think that's what we thrive under. We love, I think work is life to us because we correlate that. And it's a lot of fun. And we always have fun while we are working, like right now.
Exactly. It's, we have two kids. We're blessed to have an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old. And the work-life balance aspect, you try and be somewhat of mentors to your kids and lead by example. So much to Manit's point, we're working this weekend, going to miss Father's Day, but going to make it up on Monday for the kids. And that's what work-life balance is to us, at least. And you do your best and make the most of what you got.
You do your best. It's my motto as well. And you have a lot on the docket this week. And I know you're involved in a lot of different things at the 40th annual Food and Wine Classic. So what have you been up to?
Well, you know me, my favorite word is yes. So whenever they ask anything, I'm like, yes. So from like sabering champagne at the,
you were very good at that, by the way.
I know. It gives me such a high. I'm like, yes. They're like, anybody wants to saber? I'm like, yes, it's me. It's a new trick that I've learned. So I show off as much as possible I have a demo this afternoon and tomorrow. And they are so many, like at the tents. So yeah, just everywhere and wherever that I see that I have to show up, I show up.
You are teaching a class on naan tomorrow.
Yes, today.
Today and tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay.
Manit on repeat.
One of my favorite carbs, manit on repeat. I love that.
You know, I think it's so fascinating, the community that you've built in Nashville. We were talking a little bit about the things that the gap in ingredient availability, the fact that you were able to sort of take this crystal ball and see what was needed in that moment in time in a market that was really starving for it. And I think that you, through the success, what you've brought on the plate, obviously there has been so much attention brought to that. And I wanted to talk about what are the gaps now, because especially in some of these Midwestern markets, what are you seeing are the things that really need to be faced in sort of, it is a changing climate, economy. What's happening now in Nashville, and what are you doing to address it?
Nashville has continued to grow exponentially. And I would take the credit that we were one of the first ones to move there. And one of the gaps we filled was the Chinese restaurant, because there was P.F. Chang's, and they were the mom and dads, nothing against them, but there was not an eclectic, authentic Chinese, and I spent some time in Shanghai. So that's how we had started. And now I think when we, back in 2014, there were less than 1,000 restaurants on TripAdvisor in Nashville. Now the number has just doubled on TripAdvisor.
That's astounding.
Right? And take away the two and a half years of COVID, right? During that, there was literally no growth in the restaurant business. To talk about what is missing in Nashville is really a tough question to answer because Nashville has become home to a lot of famous restaurateurs. A lot of people have actually taken the challenge heads on and gotten into Nashville. We've seen a lot of people moving from East Coast and West Coast into the South, Tennessee being one of them. And they have somewhat created their own niche market and following.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, 10 years ago when we moved over there, getting access to fresh ingredients, that was a challenge, right? And that did dictate how we designed our menu. Now, I mean, thanks to you, they are all of these beautiful ingredients that we do have access to. But the growth in Nashville is so exponential that at times it's always a struggle it's the demand and supply. So the demand is really high. The supply is still, it's getting there, but it's still limited. So I think that is one thing which we want more supply in Nashville. Mm-hmm.
And to quickly, now that I go back and think, when Manith and I moved from New York City, we had a lot of these hole-in-the-wall places which were our favorites. For example, a Sri Lankan restaurant, an Ethiopian restaurant. There was even a Nigerian place. Nashville does miss things of those nature. Some street foods which could be really, really out there. And I don't think Ethiopian and Nigerian food is really, really out there. I think it can fit into the mainstream, just like Mexican, Thai, Indian, Chinese, and whatnot. So I'd love to see one of those restaurants come into play in Nashville, personally.
Oh, absolutely. I think there are so many opportunities. The community itself, I'm curious, because you've sort of got this celebrity effect, right? And you've got the music studios, and you have then those locals that are living there. And then I think there's the tourism. And then I think some of the locals are sort of, they're in different places, right? They live in different places. And I know coming from Northern California that I do, sometimes the local restaurants hurt because they struggle to find their community and their following. And I'm curious, like, what that effect is, because like you were talking about ingredients, I think the more attention a city has like Nashville, then the more you're able to justify, look, you should have, from my perspective, I'm always going to bring the blue food in, but you should have these fabulous seaweeds there, and Mike Graham from Monterey Bay Seaweed Company should be distributing there because obviously there's a market. So was it hard to get, because it is a very diverse, almost distributed sort of market, was it hard to find that, or is there more of a local market than I know about?
So I always say Nashville is the music city because of the audience, and it's become a foodie city because of the audience, right? As Vivek was saying that, you know, there are people who are moving from California, from New York. They are people who are traveling all over the world. Now we have a nonstop international flight from Nashville to Heathrow, and that literally...
Isn't that something?
It's amazing because it makes the world smaller. So there are people who are traveling from all over the world, and they have very discerning palates. Mm-hmm. And discerning palates really starts from the foundation of the quality of food that you get, right? Mm-hmm. And that is the one thing that we are seeing. Nashville... When we first moved to Nashville, everybody was like, oh, this is going to be a celebrity chef who's going to come over and, you know, show her face and leave. But the fact that we've made Nashville our home, we are as much locals as celebrity, and having that, the loyalty of people who are locals. So we've captured that loyalty, but also people, tourists who are coming, they are coming over to the restaurant. So I do think that we have... struck gold as to being right at, you know, getting both the aspects. And I think that really, really works for us.
I think that's so exciting, isn't it? And it also puts you on a little firmer footing when the market goes up and down.
Absolutely, it does. And when we talk about sourcing ingredients, in 2016, we started a brewery called Mantra Artisan Ales. And it started off as a craft brewery, and one of our signature beers was a saffron IPA, which made it to one of the top 8 beers in the world by Condé Nast. And we were so blessed to have placed Nashville on the international beer map. There was Australia, there was Germany, there was England, and California, of course, but then there was Franklin, Tennessee.
Saffron IPA. Now, obviously, saffron comes through in that, but what are the other flavor profiles in that? That sounds so delicious.
Yes. Cardamom was one minor ingredient, but saffron and cardamom are those, you know, hand in a glove relationship. If you don't fuse the two well together, you can make a real mess real easily out of it. But we got a brewmaster who worked very hard with Manit and myself, and we came up with a delicious recipe, and it paired very well with the cuisine we served, because there was a lack of pairing a perfect beverage, in our opinion. And that's what inspired us to create that saffron IPA. But coming back to the point of sourcing ingredients, now, when you're in Tennessee, there is the hops that come out, and you have to contractually buy an X amount of hops. And our brewmaster, Derek Morse, was always struggling to get those contracts, because the microbrews in California and New York, those were the big boys, and they would get all those contracts before a small player in Tennessee could get it. But as luck would have it, and as the audience was very, very kind to us, we grew into up to a point where we could contractually get those hops in much bigger quantities. But talk about sourcing and being a smaller player and being able to get your hands on it. So he would get in on 4 o'clock in the morning when the contracts would go out, and he would be sitting on the computer like, bid, 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 bid. So that's just one small story in the bigger scheme of things.
But then it paves the way.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, think of now all of the different groups that are brewing beer. And, I mean, it paves the way for those opportunities because you were able to break down those walls.
Yes, from a microbrewery, we went into now what we have is Hop Springs. It's an 86-acre beer park that we've created in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Another big growing town, but still a small dot at a national level. Yeah, and we stopped distribution of our beer because now we've made it, in our opinion, we would like to say a destination where people come for music, people come for beer, people come for
disc golf.
Disc golf, yeah, exactly.
And, oh, that's an Andrew Zimmerman thing. Have you told him? That's his, like, big hobby. That's
really?
The sport he does is disc golf.
We need to tell Andrew.
You're
going
to have Andrew
I'm
come.
I'm sensing an event happening.
Yeah, I am
here
too.
Soon.
Oh, now
Let's
we're talking.
That
Let's do that, yeah. Yes. It was designed by the French and U.S. Olympic ex-Olympic team players.
Well, you spoke of this venue last year. How has it evolved over the past year? Has there been any developments?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the word pivot has become so, again, it's grown exponentially. Mm-hmm. So our brewery was just struggling during the pandemic times, and we realized that people wanted to go out in open spaces and wanted to get together safely and whatnot and listen to music, because we were still very much in the music city. But Nashville was closed during that time. So we got this 86 acres. We're like, okay, let's just do music over here. Now we're a pretty decent music venue. We have a lot of music festivals that go on every quarter. Weekly, there is music. There's the dog park, like I said, and the disc golf. So it's evolved. It's evolved from a brewery to some sort of a lifestyle place, I would say.
Great place to relax, sit back, and enjoy yourself. Sounds
oh, yes.
Great.
The rocking chairs, we do serve iced tea as well.
New Vibes Wine offers limited edition wines from top appellations delivered directly to your door so you can relax and focus on what matters most, you. As a team of working women, their goal is to simplify the decision-making process for busy individuals like you by providing a variety of delicious, high-quality wines. New Vibes Wine Club members receive monthly allocations of 3, 6, or 12 bottles, and they guarantee their product. They will refund or replace any varietal that's not up to your taste. Subscribe at newvibeswine.com today and receive 50% off your first wine club order. New Vibes Wine. Cheers to the everyday.
I have a loaded question for you both. What do you think is the biggest misconception about Indian food?
Curry. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's not that Indian food doesn't have curry. Curry are sauces. But the fact that that people think that curry powder is an Indian ingredient is something I think which is the biggest misconception. I think the other also is that it's $8.95 all you can eat buffet with a layer of grease, and once you have eaten it, it is like you're done for the day. But to us, I think we grew up in India with three fresh meals a day. Seasonal food was the only food that we ate. I mean, red carrots, you would get it for 1 week in December, eat it, enjoy it, and then wait for the next year. And I think that's what led us to savor different seasonalities. Like, I would look forward for the first rainfall, you know, after a blistering hot summer in India, because that first rainfall meant that there were fresh lychees which would get on the market, right? Like, those were like such sensory things that we really look forward to. And I think that is a big misconception, that it is curries. It's so much more than curries.
I think, you know, you fire us up when you ask us about misconceptions.
Well, I said a loaded question, right? I deliver.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Maneet and I are people who are like, we had to train a lot of our team members when we opened up the restaurant in Nashville, that expect a ton of phone calls and inquiries about what time does your buffet open? Because it is a really massive preconceived notion that if you're in an Indian restaurant, you're going to serve a buffet. And if you're not serving a buffet, chances are that you do not necessarily qualify for that Indian restaurant. So our struggle, which we absolutely embrace, both Maneet and I, is to change the norm and say, no. Indian food is as fresh as it can get. Maneet and I both, we grew up on three freshly cooked meals a day. And we want to share that story with everybody. And we try and do that through the restaurant and through chats and conversations like we're having right now. It is a fresh, vibrant cuisine which has very strong roots, and it can take on and work very well with other cuisines of the world. And one of the dishes in our restaurant is the poutine. It's one of the highest selling menu items. We made the grave mistake of taking it out of the menu because we wanted to keep it seasonal.
There was a revolt, wasn't there?
There was.
I predict that.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Let's just stay a little shy of bloodshed.
But let's also say that our version of the poutine, which Vivek and I, after one beer too many in Montreal, we were having the poutine. We were like, this needs flavor. So we have chaat masala fries, which is like this mango powder, and then it's topped with tandoori chicken, and then the tikka masala sauce, and then ooey gooey cheesy. Like, it is like, I think the one thing cheesier than me, but it is so good.
Yes, that sounds wonderful, actually.
Time to make a trip to Nashville.
I know. We talked about this last year. It needs to happen.
Yeah, no, this is just amazing. I think that the thing that's incredible is that you had something that was, it really started locally and then it spread regionally and now nationally, and all of the other work that you're doing to really draw attention to this, I think has so much effect in different parts of the market, and it takes a lot of work. So we're just really grateful for all of the different elements that you're bringing to this.
Thank you.
Is there anything on the horizon you can share? Yeah, brewing?
There is something brewing in the horizon, but we can't share it right now.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. We're very excited about what's on the horizon. It's something that Maneet and I have, it's going to be one of the bigger highlights of our career so far. That is all
wow.
I can say at this moment.
Well, wow. Can't wait.
Neither can we to share it.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for sitting down with us. It's so good to see you again. And I hope to see you a little bit more the rest of the weekend. And thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much for taking the time out when it's such a busy weekend.
Thank you.
Delighted to be here. Thank you both.
Thank you for listening to HRN's live coverage of 2023 Food and Wine Classic in Aspen. I'm Christine Sykes-Low.
And I'm Jennifer Bushman.
Special thanks to New Vibes Wine for making our coverage possible. You can listen to all of our coverage on our podcast, Heritage Radio Network, on tour. Find it on heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe. HRN On Tour is powered by Simplecast. This episode of HRN On Tour was produced in part by generous funding from the Julia Child Foundation.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.